When it comes to jobs in Northeast Ohio, there is a theme that persists. There's a critical gap between the number of jobs sitting out there unfilled and the supply of trained workers out there to fill them. In order to maximize the economy, that demand and supply imbalance in the workforce must be addressed. But some industries are doing better. That's according to the latest jobs report from Team NEO. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. This hour, we'll have a conversation about the Team NEO jobs report that in part tells us what fields are hottest. Here's a teaser. You want to train to be a nurse? That's probably a safe bet. We'll also explore the many jobs in the gig economy through a report by Cuyahoga Community College. We're talking jobs, what employees like and don't like, and how to attract talent in Northeast Ohio. That's coming up. First, the news. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Good morning. Thanks for joining us and a happy Thursday to you. The COVID-19 pandemic triggered a seismic shift in the U.S. workforce. Office workers began working remotely and many have stayed that way. Service industry workers demanded higher pay and more protections for public-facing jobs. Industries like healthcare support and materials moving grew at faster rates than other fields like sales and administrative support. Many of those trends held true in Northeast Ohio. And we have a pair of new reports to dig into some of those changes as well as other facets of the workforce. A report from Team NEO released at the end of October finds that the region still has a critical challenge of getting workers trained for in-demand fields such as information technology and healthcare. And a report from Cuyahoga Community College specifically focuses on how the gig economy impacts Northeast Ohio and how much bigger that sector is and how much it affects the economy. With me in studio to talk about these two reports are Jacob Dorisky, Vice President of Strategy and Research at Team NEO. Jacob, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having us.
And Dr. Michael Baston is also here. He is president of Cuyahoga Community College. Doctor, welcome to you.
Jenny, good to be with you this morning.
All right, great to have you both. And if you have questions about the subject or if you'd like to join the conversation, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. So, Jacob, I'd like to start with you. Team NEO has been producing a variety of reports in this series, Aligning Opportunities, for 7 years now.
Right.
There is a theme that persists, as I mentioned in my introduction, of needing to address this demand-supply alignment. So tell us what that means and what does your report's theme show us?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're 7 years into Aligning Opportunities, and two themes have emerged and one persists. One is that we continue to have critical opportunities for workers to find good, meaningful jobs in Northeast Ohio, sectors like information technology and healthcare, that are going unfilled by Northeast Ohio residents because of lack of credentialing or a lack of alignment with what employers are seeking. So there's opportunity, but the challenge is how do we ensure that more of our Northeast Ohio residents have those opportunities to fill those jobs? And the challenge that we've seen more holistically is it's not just that demand alignment piece. That's critical to it. But we have broader challenges as a region as we think about our demographic headwinds, slightly declining population and aging population, that in the short term, we can't simply grow our way out of this talent challenge, right? So what it means now and why reports like these tend to highlight different issues around veterans and workers with disabilities and minority workers and women is that we need to be more creative as a region on how we get the people who are here today invested in pathways and opportunities to show them that they should stay here and they should take these really, really strong, good-paying jobs.
And particularly when we know that there are many people out there in the region who are locals, natives, who need jobs.
They do. Lots of people here who need jobs. If you look at labor force participation rates, the number of people who are actively participating in the economy or looking for work, it's still down about 40,000 people since the pandemic. We haven't had people return in the same numbers. If you look at participation rates overall relative to the country as a whole, we're down about 1.5%, 2% more than the country is. So we have people here. We have people here who need to understand that there are great opportunities. But, and this is where Dr. Baston really comes into play in a lot of this work, is we have to figure out the right way to give them those opportunities.
All right. So, Doctor, I turn to you now. The report that Tri-C has put on its first page, the gig workforce isn't just about delivering dinner. So let's talk about that first off, the perception of what the gig economy is and what kinds of jobs we are actually talking about in Northeast Ohio.
Well, we traditionally think of the gig worker as the DoorDash, the Uber Eats, the Uber driver. But in fact, that is a relatively small part of the population. Most of the freelancers in our country are in the areas of design and technology and creativity, all kinds of financial service supports. So there are a whole plethora of ways in which the freelance economy is an economy that we can tap into, because the entrepreneurial spirit in America is probably as strong as it's ever been. And the pandemic has been a part of sort of raising the awareness that you can actually engage in these entrepreneurial efforts in the freelance space and actually take care of yourself, your family, and meet all of the different challenges of life. So I think this is an opportunity for us to focus now on a population that can help address some of the talent shortage issues we have.
And again, those gig workers kind of reiterate what some of those jobs are that we're seeing a lot of people who are participating in the gig economy doing.
Well, I look at those who are actually doing all of the website developments, those that are doing all of the work around financial services. There are so many things. If you're a small business, as an example, and you don't have a large suite of different executive officers, you actually can use Fiverr, Upwork, or any of the other apps that will actually give you access to qualified, capable professionals who can then take up these specific things in your business to move it forward. You may not have the capacity to have your own graphic designer on staff, but now you can have a graphic design support. You may not have copy editors. Now you have access to copy editors. So you just think about any kind of thing that a business would need. There are freelancers who are professionals who want to do this work, who can come in and manage a project in a reasonable amount of time for a reasonable cost to move your business and expand your capacity.
And I would think that for industries that might have felt some contraction with the pandemic and afterwards, the idea of paying out a freelancer to do, let's say, a job in a part-time capacity might make more business sense. How does it make working sense for the people who are choosing to be in the gig economy?
Well, when you think about it, for those, if you blend the gig worker with your professional staff, what it does is that your professional staff gets to see this highly engaged person who's now going to come in and expand your capacity. And so part of what business and industry has to do is make sure that they appropriately integrate the freelancer in with the professional staff so that you can expand capacity and actually build momentum in your business.
Now, Jacob, you talked about the fact that Northeast Ohio is still behind nationally by about 1% or 1.5% when it comes to post-pandemic job levels. Is that right? So tell me, paint a picture of how the pandemic did impact our workforce here in our region and how the buildup has been.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back, you know, like 4 years, right? Think 2019. 2019, when you looked at sort of the fundamentals of the Northeast Ohio economy, we had about 40 to 50,000 more workers as a whole. I touched on that already, but that's important to keep in mind. So the question becomes, from a worker perspective, where do those folks go? Well, some of those folks were about 5% older than the country as a whole. Some of those people left entirely. They may be here in the region still and not working, or they may have left the region entirely. Others have a less clear answer. 18 to 30-year-old males are the demographic that has returned in the lowest numbers that we've seen. And you'll ask the question, why? Why is that? There are a variety of anecdotes for why that is, but we don't have a clear answer as to why that is. From a sector-based perspective, how are we doing in the economy? A lot of sectors have fully recovered jobs, have fully recovered GDP, professional services, finance, banking, legal, professional, and scientific and technical areas of the economy. But when you look at some of the most in-demand sectors of the economy, healthcare, manufacturing, for instance, they're still down 1% to 2% from where they were from a jobs perspective in 2019. So we're still playing a little bit of catch-up. And again, I'll sound like a broken record on this issue, but we're doing it with these demographic headwinds that we can't simply grow our way out of this. We have to keep more people here. We have to train more people who are here. And we have to grow the region with the assets that we have in place.
All right. If we have job seekers or people who know job seekers that are listening, I was struck by the fact that in the report, the number one job that needs filling in Ohio, what is it, Jacob?
Registered nurses.
All right. So if someone's looking for a job, is committed to getting trained and wants a good career with, tell me, Jacob, good wages?
Oh, great wages. High family-sustaining wage opportunities, lots of different career paths. I mean, and areas of the economy that I think most people even 5 to 10 years ago wouldn't think registered nurses right now, there's a medical tourism element to that.
Oh, absolutely.
Where they're traveling throughout the country to take part-time opportunities. We had a neighbor who just went to California for 6 months to live in San Diego. Now, I'm not encouraging anyone to leave Northeast Ohio to go take nursing jobs, but that said, it opens up
they
a
might
variety
not come
of
back from that, well, from that beach.
But it also supports this concept of the freelance worker.
Absolutely.
You know, this is exactly why we have to pay attention to this potential population to actually help us resolve some of the issues in our own community. And making sure that people can not only get the training that they need, but the opportunities that can connect for those that need help. Excuse me.
And while we're at it, talking about nursing, let's go ahead and do a plug for Cuyahoga Community College and your nursing program.
Oh, my gosh. It's one of the largest programs anywhere with great success rates, and we place students right away into these meaningful opportunities. Whether you're a nurse or in any allied health profession, we have so many programs because we know the need is great in our community. And quite frankly, we're about 1 million nurses short in this country. And so we've got to really double down on exposing various different folks, particularly young people, to this opportunity in a much more robust way. And we got to make sure that we're preparing people for this opportunity.
Yeah, we just did a segment, and one of the things that we touched upon was that even like the mental strength of the healthcare industry is, you know, there is a staffing shortage.
Yes.
And there is strain on workers of, you know, various backgrounds. So to get the nurse staffing levels back up is pretty important.
Absolutely.
If you want to participate in the conversation, 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903 or shoot us an email at soi@ideastream.org. I do want to take a call from Todd calling in from Cleveland this morning. Hi, Todd. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Hey, good morning, Jenny, Jacob, and Michael. This isn't what I called about, but since you mentioned it, I grew up with 13 women and 2 guys that all became registered nurses and or nurse practitioners. They've never been unemployed. Mm-hmm. They went straight out of college into the economic middle class, and it is a good profession. We need to release them from all of this dang on paperwork so they can do their jobs better. That's a problem. But this is what I called about, though. I would like to see this pursuit accomplished, too, that you're talking about. And this is where Cuyahoga Community College could help a lot. If they're not already doing this, you might be. 13- and 14-year-olds should have it built into their curriculum in the public schools, lesson plans about jobs, the cost of getting those jobs and time, energy, and money, and the cost and the location that is best suited for them, whatever the job may be, so that they have an understanding early on before they get a work permit, before they start interning and doing other things such as that, as to what it means to be able to have a career and what it entitles, what they need to do in order to obtain that career. It will help a lot if you cultivate the talent here through that, but it has to be in their curriculum early on, and you don't need to press them real hard about it. It could just be an even, steady flow.
Yeah, that's a great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great point, Todd. I appreciate it. And in fact, when I was the education reporter here at IdeaStream, I attended a groundbreaking of sorts with the Cleveland Metropolitan School District and a whole program they were doing to introduce their students as young as elementary school kids to industry, to jobs, to fields. How is Tri-C involved in that, Doctor?
Well, we love the fact that CMSD, as an example, has the PACE program, starting them in the 6th grade.
That's right.
Making sure that they're actively engaged in understanding career exploration. And through our College Credit Plus programs with all of our elementary K-12 system, you know, we think deeply about how curricular alignment, that exposure exposes young people to viable careers that they might not even know exist is very important. So I agree with the caller. We all have to continue to make sure that we have that level of awareness raising so that we can ultimately create a greater pathway for more of our young people so that they can start to make meaningful contributions to our community.
Then just to add on to that, the PACE program that Dr. Beston talked about, I mean, that's going beyond CMSD now. Yes. and looking at inner ring suburbs throughout Cuyahoga County. It's building a framework through the Greater Cleveland Career Consortium that is so incredibly important to what Todd said. And now, whatever Todd knows about the secret sauce of developing nurses, we've got to figure that out too. But it's incredibly important.
Yeah, and especially as, I know in the region, it's trying to tout itself as this medical/technology hub, Ohio, with its semiconductor chip plant being built outside of Columbus. I know there's really a push for that, and yet connecting those types of jobs with the people that work here seems to still be the obstacle and the opportunity.
Yeah, and the obstacle is often demonstrating the opportunity for people and showing them a viable pathway. And that's not always just traditional training. Sometimes that's the way that life can get in the way for all of us. It's transportation barriers. It's life challenges. And finding creative ways to think about how we get more people engaged in the market in a meaningful way. One of the things you touched on, semiconductors. When you look at the demand for semiconductor workers, a lot of that requires an associate's degree or less. A lot of that potential that we see here statewide, but also for supply chain in Northeast Ohio, is looking for good skilled workers who aren't thinking about the traditional model of bachelor's plus. And oh, by the way, institutions like Cuyahoga Community College and some of their two-year partners throughout Northeast Ohio are producing some of the very best talent in that space. So we need to be able to sell and market that value proposition here, regardless of where that investment is taking place in Ohio.
One of the other things that we've got to pay attention to is that business and industry have to be a part of the conversation. So when we look at the work of the United Way on the sort of, the indices of worker opportunities, the social determinants of work, transportation is an issue, childcare is an issue. So if, in fact, businesses want to have access to wonderfully qualified talent,
right,
they've got to understand all of these social determinants that are going to make making a decision to be a full-time employee at your business a possibility or a non-starter. And that's why in the interim of this, gig workers are part of the strategy, but not the totality of it. The working conditions and the decisions of employers are going to actually impact whether we're going to make progress in this space or not.
And I want to talk more about that, especially as it pertains to women in our region.
Absolutely.
And the workforce and aspects that are non-starters or not. But I'd like to take another call from Bob calling in from Cleveland this morning. Bob, welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead. Me. Yeah.
So I just wanted to comment. I'm a recruiter for a cybersecurity firm. We do a lot of incident response work. And something that's become more of an issue lately is as we look for full-time employees that are going to be dedicated to incident response, which is a very demanding field, having multiple gigs and sort of a side business going on or an LLC actually ends up being a detractor. Mm-hmm. It ends up being an issue because of the concern of dedication to the work itself. And so we might have an issue with something like that. It's becoming a lot more prevalent these days and probably something that was a bit unforeseen. As far as a concern. So just something to point out there and think of as we, look at how to solve the problem. I think the bigger issue is probably looking at aligning with stuff coming out of the Biden administration. They put out a call to all departments to help solve the talent gap for cybersecurity practitioners. And there's specific, there was a call to all departments to come up with a plan, put up funding, whether it's regional, city level, whatever, to develop early career pathway programs to build cybersecurity professionals. And so I feel that would be a really good place to focus efforts. And how do we entice businesses to start or at least recruit and develop talent in a way that incentivizes them?
So that's an interesting point. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Bob, for bringing that up. Jacob, do you have a response to that about kind of maybe there's a disconnect between the intention of what the company needs and, you know, is it a little bit not unreliable, but is it not as consistent of the work that they need from a gig employee?
Well, you know, Bob's point is a reasonable one, and that is there is no silver bullet. What we're talking about is if it's gig workers is a component of the solution to our broader challenges. Right. Will it work for everyone? Will it maybe work for Bob in this specific instance? Not necessarily, but are there companies that can take advantage of these workers and think about them differently? There absolutely are. And one of the things that we found through the pandemic is that the companies who are most successful, does it always work? No. But those who are thinking outside of the box, thinking creatively and willing to take some of these challenges often had some of the fewest challenges in actually recruiting workers.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for staying with us this hour. Today, we're talking about a pair of reports that talk about jobs coming from Team NEO and Cuyahoga Community College. They're focused on Northeast Ohio's workforce, where we see talent shortages, how things have changed post-pandemic, and how even the gig economy is contributing to our region. Staying with me are Dr. Michael Baston, the president of Cuyahoga Community College, and Jacob Duritsky, vice president of strategy and research at Team NEO. Of course, if you have a question or would like to join our conversation, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or tweet us. We are at Sound of Ideas. I have an email from John in Eastlake. Thanks so much for writing in, who says, my daughter is graduating. Excuse me. My daughter is graduating and looking to go to college for nursing. We were just talking about that. Is there a different path than a traditional four-year college? She's been accepted in several big-name schools in Ohio, so congratulations to her. But what he wants to know is she wasting her time and money? So I'm going to turn that to you, Michael.
Well, certainly pursuing a degree in nursing is not a waste of time. Certainly a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful profession, as we've mentioned. Starting out at the community college is a very cost-effective way to get a quality education. All of the nursing programs are all under the same accreditation, so they all have the same standards. So you can expend resources at a high-cost institution or a more affordable institution to get the same education. I think it is important for those that are moving in this profession, I think, to start out in a community college, get a strong foundation, lots of practical experience, transition into a four-year institution at a later time. Well, you can continue to build momentum, but that practical experience actually really moves you in a direction within your profession. There are lots of different nursing professions. You know, we think about nursing. There are a lot of different areas where nurses are employed and deployed. So giving people the opportunity to get a general education and then specialize later probably is a great career path for your daughter.
And so what I'm hearing is that it's really important to kind of find out what the routes are and where maybe you want to end up if it's specifically as a nurse and see what opportunities there are. And if, you know, budget is important to you and saving those dollars and maybe a community college route is just as effective, then that's something that should be researched and looked into.
Absolutely.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Dave from Chesterland's calling in this morning. Dave, go ahead. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everyone. I was just waiting for someone to say something or mention something about the teacher shortage. And I graduated in 1968 from WKSU, saw a radio station being built all 4 years on campus.
Excellent.
A wonderful public school teaching career in a local public school district here in Cleveland area. And salary and benefits are wonderful. You start off a bachelor's degree, $50,000, public school, not private pro or anything like that. And the salary, you start off at $50,000, bachelor's degree, 10, 20, 30 hours, master's degree. By the time you get 15 years, it's a career, not a job. Time you get 15 years and a master's degree plus, your salary is $100,000. I have STRS. I retired in 03. 35 years in the same school district with tenure. That helps. And freedom of speech is a little freer then, and writing. And then my salary, 20 years ago retired, my salary is about $95,000 a year, and I'm a first-year baby boomer, 77.
All righty. Well, I appreciate that call, Dave. I mean, you know, that's an important topic to bring up. The teacher shortage has been incredibly painful for, you know, the field of education and our local schools around the country. The pandemic just hit teachers and staff at schools hard, emotionally, physically. A lot of people either retired early or left the field. So although teaching is a wonderful career and can acquire you that salary, we hear a lot about teachers wanting to be paid more and needing more support in order to make that a sustaining career. Jacob?
Yeah. Well, the point is absolutely right. There is a shortage of teachers. And I think don't just focus on manufacturing, IT, and healthcare. Those have historically been the biggest. But when you think about education, when you think about opportunities in the behavioral health fields and behavioral sciences and things like psychology, critical shortages that we're seeing there too. And look, all of these pathways offer different options and different opportunities. And I think to Todd's original point when he called, a big component of this is starting to explore that at a much, much younger point, at a much younger age, and starting to think about where those pathways exist. I think you're right that there's a perception that teachers are overworked and maybe undercompensated, and that's part of the challenge with any of sort of the market dynamics of the in-demand occupations we're talking about. But I'm a bit of an optimist on this one. I think the bigger opportunity is to talk to people about the opportunities that exist, to show them the pathways, and to show them that regardless of who you are and where you start, you can find success in some of these areas.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about specific demographics. Susan wrote in and asked, what's being done to reach out to older adults in our community, such a rich resource that may have unique needs to re-enter or stay in the job market? And I think that's a great point.
Well, when you think about it, my average age of our students is 26 years old. So many of our students come, they're the older adult, they have some college but no degree. They are the upskiller, the retooler, that person that wants a second or third chance to move themselves forward. So the adult learner is a primary audience that we have. But even beyond that group, we have an encore program for 55 plus. We have a 60 plus program. So we have programs to really try to capture the talent, the imagination, the energy of those who have lots of experience so that we don't lose all of those experiences in the workforce, you know. And we try to get some of them to be teachers, adjunct professors, and others who can be instructors in various different fields. So it is important for us to cultivate all the talent. We really don't have a resource that we can leave behind. We have to make sure that everyone who can contribute meaningfully to the intellectual development of our community is fully engaged and tapped into.
Yeah, and just to build off of that, I mean, this conversation lends itself to pathways and degrees, and that's great. But our friends at the Greater Cleveland Partnership, for instance, have looked at some of the tech worker demand and have found that oftentimes that's not just for your entry-level worker.
Sure.
It is for people who have some experience, that middle management type of role that is a little harder to fill. So if you have someone who's maybe more senior in their career, can maybe do it on a part-time basis in a consulting way, or is an aspirational gig worker in the economy, these are the different ways you can start to address some of those gaps.
Well, especially in a time when it is expensive to live, more and more people need to work in their later years in order to survive. And so trying to connect, you know, let's say our older members of our community with jobs seems vitally important.
Right, vitally important. You have the experience. You have oftentimes the want to continue down that path and maybe do it in a slightly different way. And let's not let that expertise go to waste, right? And the challenge, though, is as we think about that, that gets you so far. And so you think about an area like manufacturing and production. The man or woman who's been in that job for 30 years and knows everything that exists there probably needs two people to replace them. But we need to make sure those two people who are there when that person eventually leads is going to be an important component of that pipeline.
All right. We've spent a portion of this program touting the praises of the nursing industry and getting a career as a nurse. So it's only fair to take this call from Julie in North Ridgeland. Julie, thanks for calling into the Sound of Ideas. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. My daughter graduated from Cleveland State University in 2023, and she did very well. She passed her NCLEX right away. So they did prepare her very well academically. However, she got a job in a major trauma hospital in Cleveland, and reality just kind of smacked her because nurses are very overworked, and mostly just the sickest patients are in the hospital now, and they overload them with responsibility. There's a lot of patients that need to be turned, and then Medicare will penalize the hospital for not, you know, turning patients all the time, and they don't have people helping. It's hard to get, like, enough people to turn some patients because they're very heavy, and just the stress of charting everything. And then they, you know, she did ask for more help as a new nurse because they only train them for, you know, they only put them in, what do you call that, where they have a someone helping them as a new nurse.
Yeah, I think
they have a preceptor that helps them, and she asked for, like, a longer time, and they kind of didn't listen to her. You know, like, she needed more time for learning the ropes of nursing, so to speak. So I think there's a lot of strain on the nursing profession.
Well, that you know, is so important. Julie, I can hear the strain in your voice as a mother who's obviously concerned for her daughter. You know, I'm sorry that she is struggling in that way. But, you know, Julie brings up a great point, and I think that's what we are talking about when we talk about the shortage and the fact that if you don't kind of close that gap when it comes to the jobs out there and the people that are out there to fill them, then the immediate impact is on the people who do have those jobs. And obviously Julie's daughter is feeling that. So I don't know. Is there much to be said, but we need more nurses?
Yes. I mean, that's the short answer. We need more nurses. And I mean, you know, to her daughter, I mean, you know, kudos. That is incredibly important work and absolutely challenging work at times. But that is a testament to the fact that we need more educated people in those fields taking those jobs.
And we have to remember, as we are compensating those who are in these professions, you know, we have to remember the challenges that are associated with these professions. As we talk about the reality, making sure that the students have those experiences, because they really need to know what they're getting into as they do this work. It is challenging work, and employers, regardless of who they are, hospitals and otherwise, we have to think about the employee experience if we are going to have employees that are going to do their best work. And that is oftentimes not what has been top of mind by employers. And it doesn't matter if it's in nursing, manufacturing, all of the different segments that's saying we need people. If we're going to have the old paradigms of expectation and not really think about the worker of today, we're not going to actually be able to get people who are going to stick with these kind of opportunities and actually make the contribution that we need.
We only have 2 minutes left. I do want to hit on a subject that we talked about, women and the workforce in the region and factors that help support women getting jobs, maybe having careers if they're raising children. What are the efforts being made in our region to kind of address that?
We certainly need to double down on the kinds of support. And that's why I mentioned earlier about the United Way work around the social determinants of work. At Tri-C, we have a Women in Transition program, a whole set of programs to support women as they transition into whatever area and aspect of life and work and managing families and those sorts of things. Because we really believe if we are going to take advantage of getting people in the best position to come and work and even learn, we have to be intentional about the things that we do.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Women are an incredibly important component of the Northeast Ohio labor force. They have returned fully to their pre-pandemic numbers. They make up more than their male counterparts do in terms of percentage of the total labor force.
Wow.
And they're underrepresented in the most in-demand occupations. We don't have time for it, but there's an incredible piece of work that we were lucky enough to be a part of that was led by the Fund for Economic Future called Where Are the Workers? And I would encourage your audience to go and look that up because it deals with some of those very issues.
And we will have them on to talk about
Great.
That. That's in the works. Dr. Michael Baston, the president of Cuyahoga Community College, and Jacob Duritsky, vice president of strategy and research at Team NEO. I appreciate both of you joining me for the conversation.
Thank you so much. It was great to be with you, Jenny.
Thanks, as always.
Thank you. Now, to get the last word on today's topic, send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We are on Twitter @soundofideas, and you can follow me @JennyHamill_. Tomorrow on the Sound of Ideas, it's the Friday Reporters Roundtable. This week, Glenn Forbes is in the host chair. He's joined in studio with Abigail Botar and Josh Boose, also down at the State House by Karen Kassler. Monday on the program, we're going to talk about tipping. We want your feedback. Has tipping gone too far? Tipping at those card readers at the coffee shop? Are you happy to tip at a restaurant worker? What about a barista or a delivery driver? And now that it's the holiday season, do you tip when you pick up your dry cleaning? Please send your thoughts. We want to hear from you. SOI@ideastream.org. Lastly, save the date for our next Sound of Ideas community tour. We are going to be discussing the state of school boards at the Hudson Library and Historical Society on Tuesday, December 12th at 6:30 p.m. The event is hosted by our own Mike McIntyre, and it's free and open to the public. If you missed any portion of the program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can also hear a rebroadcast tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU.